funny. A country totally dedicated to Our Lady. This Pope, totus tuus, right? Totally yours, Marian. This Marian Pope. They take him out of Poland. He's shocked. He can't believe it. The Pope is supposed to be Italian, right? Polish? First Slavic Pope ever. He goes to Poland for his first trip. They asked him, Holy Father, where would you like to go for your first trip? Poland. Oh, well, that would be, no, sir, that'd be very undiplomatic. I mean, that would just really make the communists upset. You know, Moscow would need Poland. We're going to Poland. We're going to Poland. So he goes there for 9 days, June 2nd through 11th, 1979. Big crowds, 5-10 million people. Father, how do you like to serve the Eucharist there? Right? I mean, you'd be there all week handing out. And he said there too, there can be no just Europe without the independence of Poland marked on the map, which is the one thing that he wasn't supposed to say. Nothing like that. All these different secret police with AK-47s surrounded. The people start chanting, "We want God. We want God." And he tells them, "Be not afraid. Be not afraid." Those words of Michael the Archangel, Gabriel the Archangel, to Mary at the Annunciation. Be not afraid. All right. May 13th, 1981. What's May 13th? Feast day of Our Lady Fatima. When Mary first appeared in Fatima, May 13, 1917. This guy, Mohammed Ali Asha, Muslim, has a plan that he's working out with the Bulgarians, communist Bulgarians, and they're going to assassinate the Pope. They're actually, the communists actually had a plan to kill the Pope. There's one thing for them to call Pope Pius XII, Hitler's Pope, and all this other stuff. This time they're gonna put a bullet in him. They're actually gonna try to kill a Pope. They drop him off at St. Peter's Square around 9 o'clock in the morning. He's got a 9mm Browning inside of his jacket, walks around all day. They're planning, he's there with a half a dozen other guys, Bulgarians, planning this attack. He's got a note that he left for himself, come wearing a cross, concealed as a Christian, wear tennis shoes for a rapid escape to take off. He's got another guy on the other side of the square, Oral Chelik, who's got a panic bomb. And the minute that Asha fires, Chelik on the other side is going to set off the panic bomb to make a noise to divert attention over there. Complete chaos. The Pope is riding around in his little white Fiat Pope Mobile. Drives around St. Peter's Square, goes past the ancient obelisk where St. Peter was martyred, scourged, almost 2,000 years earlier. Drives around, there's no hood, it's an open air, right? Just like JFK, no protection. Comes around, Asha had been waiting all day, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock, when is this gonna happen? 5 o'clock. 508, 509, 510, 511, 512, 513. It's 7 o'clock. Same date as the calendar, 513, May 13. He comes up around, lifts his gun up in the air. Asha fires, hits the Pope twice. Once in the arm, another in the abdomen, just missing the main abdominal artery by centimeters. He falls into the arms of his closest aide, Father Zhivich, who's now a cardinal in Poland, still alive. And he says to him, "Are you hit?" He said, "Yes." He said, "Does it hurt?" He said, "Yes, terribly." Ronald Reagan, who had been shot a few weeks before that, on March 30th, wrote in his diary, "You know, getting shot hurts." So he falls into the arms of Zhivich. They speed off to the hospital and get to the hospital just in time, and they saved his life. He had been, Jeevich had been told to give him last rites, the anointing of the sick. He said, it was tearing me up inside, but I did it. And he required a bunch of transfusions, very, very nearly bled to death. As he said, one hand shot the bullet, the other hand deflected. It was just a few centimeters enough away that he didn't bleed to death. All right, so it happens May 13th, 1981, feast day of Our Lady of Fatima. Who can make that up? If you were doing a movie on this, you wouldn't even try. You wouldn't even try to connect this. When these three kids, all right, who are they? I had my picture taken with them earlier, right up front here. Lucia, Jacinta, Francisco, right? She had issued these predictions, the end of one war, World War I, and then the start of another, World War II. The communism would spread its evil and errors around the world. And then there was the third secret, which was sealed in a vault, right? They kept this, no one knew what this was. John Paul II, by 1981, he had been Pope for 3 years. He hadn't read it yet. He didn't ask to see it. I mean, if it was me, if I'm Pope, first day, I want to see what that thing says, right? But no, wasn't thinking about it for whatever reason. Hadn't looked at it. Guess had other fish to fry at that point. Not really on his mind. It is after this. So he's recovering at Gemelli Clinic in July 1981. And he's thinking, he says to Jeevich and others, you know, 2/13 of May. May 13, 1917. May 13, 1981. 2/13 of May. Can this be a coincidence? His great quote, for the Christian, there is no such thing as a coincidence. So he has Cardinal Sepper of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith bring to him the third secret in the original Portuguese, the Italian translation, and he reads them and then makes this prediction about the apparent shooting, killing of a pope. And he says, this was me. This was it. This applied to me. And as Jeevich said, after that, all of his remaining doubts disappeared. He thought that the third secret applied to him. By the way, where did he go 1 year later, the 1 year anniversary, May 13th, 1982? Fatima. And he took the bullet that was in him and he put it in the crown of Our Lady of Fatima. And everybody thought, what's that all about? They didn't divulge what the third secret was for almost 20 years, May 13th of 2000. And who was the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith at that point? Ratzinger, Cardinal Ratzinger. Yeah. I wish I'd brought my book with me to get you. I'm completely out of book. I go through all the stuff in the book, all these different quotes and everything. And the main reason that I did that book, A Pope and a President, was I was finding out stuff. Because of my history of writing about Ronald Reagan, I got to know Reagan's top aides very, very well. And I learned from Bill Clark, his closest aide, who was a very devout Catholic. I became his biographer. He was like a grandfather to me. That he and Reagan and the others had done this. They did this super secret investigation to try to determine whether or not the Soviets were involved in the shooting of John Paul II. And I don't say who he is in A Pope and a President, but I could say it now, God rest his soul, because he died unexpectedly about 3 or 4 years ago. My good friend, Herb Meyer, who was the right-hand man to Bill Casey at the CIA. So you had Bill Casey running the CIA, Irish Catholic, Bill Clark running the National Security Council for Reagan, Irish Catholic. Clark, Casey, and Reagan do the super secret report. And I was told by Herb that there were two women, one in her 30s, other in 40s, that led the report. And that report is still classified to this day. We're still trying to get it released. But it concluded that the Soviets did it. The Soviets ordered the hit on the Pope. And it was given the go-ahead by the head of the KGB, Yuri Andropov, and it was carried out by the Soviet GRU, the Soviet secret police. So the communists actually tried to kill the Pope. By the way, Andropov of the KGB would have been the boss at the time of a lieutenant colonel in the KGB by the name of Vladimir Putin. But there's no way Putin would have been involved in this. This was the tightest, most secret, nastiest thing they ever did. But Putin definitely knows today what happened. No question about it. So the Soviets did it. All right, communism collapsed in 1989. There's Ronald Reagan at the Berlin Wall in September of that year when he's no longer president. Met with the Holy Father at the Vatican. And there he is taking off a chunk to bring home as a souvenir. Last couple slides, and then I'll take any questions that you have. Pope Benedict XVI in Spes Salvi in November 2007 has this great quote that I think really nails it. The communists, they treated communism like their religion. You know, Ronald Reagan used to say, yeah, Marxism-Leninism, that religion of theirs. They treated it like, and this happens with a lot of these people. It's happening in America right now, secular America. You purge religion, you take out religion, people are going to fill it with something else. There's a rise in America right now in the number of witches of all things. You know, people go for some other idea or ideology or whatever to fill what they've purged. But as Benedict said, for them, the New Jerusalem was based on this Marxist classless utopia. So, but the main mistake of the communists, it was what Jesus told Satan. Man does not live on bread alone. They thought if you could solve the economic problem, right, the bread problem, people would find happiness. But as Augustine said, there's a God-shaped vacuum in each of us, not a dollar-shaped vacuum, right? A God-shaped vacuum. You can't deny the spiritual in favor of the strictly material. Man doesn't live by bread alone. Even Pope Francis agrees. The Marxist ideology is wrong. The Marxist ideology is wrong. He said that in December 2013. By the way, that's the only thing he said about it. He hasn't said anything else since. But at least he said that. My last slide here. So this is a good story. This is a righteous battle against evil that the church won in the end of the Cold War. Communism still exists, right? But this is a battle that the church has won. Here's a guy in the bottom right there, near the bottom right. Fulton Sheen, our buddy Fulton Sheen. One of my favorite sections of the Catechism, section 409. Take a picture of that quote. The entire, the whole of man's history, right? The whole of man's history is a story of dour combat between the forces of good and the forces of evil. Stretching, as our Lord tells us, from the beginning of history until the very end. John Paul II said this too. You know, finding himself on the field of battle, man often has to struggle to do what is right, and often at great personal cost to himself. And that's a message from Our Lady of Fatima to everybody in the room. You know, you have to fight evil, and you might get called names on Twitter, right? You might get a petition organized against you, but you know, I'd hate to be standing up there someday in front of the pearly gates. And Jesus says, why did you deny me? He said, well, I didn't want to be called a bigot on Twitter. So, oh, we'll meet Saints Perpetua and Felicity here, right? Here's what they look like in the Colosseum after the lions ripped them to shreds, right? And you didn't want to be called a hater on Twitter. That's pretty pathetic, pretty pathetic. You have to stand up and fight for what's right. And you're going to get called names. But you know what? No matter which position you take, somebody's not going to like it anyway. So you might as well take the right position, right? Follow the church. Follow the catechism. Follow what Our Lady of Fatima said. All right, I'll stop it there. I'll take any questions that you have. Thank you. Just shout them out. You don't need a mic. Yes, sir, in the back. Yeah. Yeah, the Gorbachev story is really wild. I wrote two articles on this right after his death a few months ago, one for National Catholic Register, one for the American Spectator. Mikhail Gorbachev meets his maker. It's a fascinating story. So the name Mikhail is actually a baptismal name given to him, which means Michael, Saint Michael the Archangel. His mom was religious. Three of his four grandparents were religious. His mother would take icons off the wall and a cross and baptize him with it. Both Reagan and John Paul II were fascinated at the thought that Gorbachev, this leader of the Soviet Union, where atheism was a requirement if you were a member of the Communist Party, might be a closet Christian. They were fascinated by it. Gorbachev met with John Paul II at the Vatican, December 1989, and was so nervous he was shaking, Gorbachev was. And John Paul II sort of calmed him down, spoke Russian with him. At the end of the meeting, they went out and they met Raisa, Gorbachev's wife. And Gorbachev said, "Raisa, meet Pope John Paul II. He is the moral leader of the world, and he's a slob just like us." So they had this sort of common bond. But Gorbachev made all these kind of religious metaphors and allusions with Reagan, with John Paul II. But he was always really quiet about what he believed. And then one day, I think it was around 2005, a British reporter for the Telegraph is walking through Assisi in Italy, the Basilica, the tomb of St. Francis. And he looks down and Mikhail Gorbachev is there on his knees. And he talked to him. He said, "Excuse me, sir, aren't you Mikhail Gorbachev?" And he said, "Yes, I am." And he said, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, this is where I came to the church. This is where I came to the faith." And he published this story. Mikhail Gorbachev admits he's a Christian. And Mike Reagan and I immediately wrote a piece on it for Christianity Today. And then just like that, Gorbachev issued this press release saying, "It is not true. I have not become a Christian." For whatever reason, he wanted to deny it. And then Bill Clark and I worked on it, tried to put Clark got sent to Gorbachev a translation of the writings of Francis in Russian, was working on Gorbachev's soul. And we followed this for years. And until the day he died just a few weeks ago, I have never been able to confirm whether or not Gorbachev became a Christian. For whatever reason, it's something he wanted to keep intensely private and didn't want people to know about. Putin's a Christian, not a very good one, but I can say that, right? you invade Ukraine and kill all those people. That's pretty bad. But the Boris Yeltsin was a Christian. There'd be no harm in Gorbachev admitting years after the collapse of the evil empire that he had become a Christian. But for whatever reason, he wanted to keep it to himself. Kind of.